Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. You may remember we talked recently on the show about how immigrants held in immigration court or immigration detention can be held for much longer and with less due process than people charged with committing actual crimes. Well, statistics show that whether or not an immigrant facing deportation is detained while their case is decided and whether or not they have a lawyer representing them have enormous bearing on the outcome in immigration court. In U.S. criminal court, defendants have a right to counsel, and one will be appointed if they can't afford one. Now New York City is trying to provide the same service for those in immigration court. City Limits reporter Batya Unger-Sargon recently reported on this program and its effects. She joins us now along with Neka Ifemesia, who went through a long detention facing deportation to Nigeria, and Talia Peleg, an immigration attorney at Brooklyn Defender Services, who represented NECA in immigration court. Welcome, all three of you, to WNYC.
Thank you so much.
And I want to hear NECA's story, but Batya, why don't you, as the reporter, first give us some context about maybe the numbers of people being held in detention here in New York and across the country?
I think there are about 400,000 immigrant detainees right now across the country. These people are being held in actual prisons, frequently private prisons, and they're being held in conditions that are frequently worse than those of other incarcerated prisoners, as I'm sure NECA can tell you.
And what crimes trigger deportation? Well, I'll ask you, Talia, as the attorney, what crimes trigger deportation proceedings, or does there have to be a crime?
No, Brian, there doesn't. Actually, you know, there's a whole host of civil violations that can lead to someone being detained in immigration. And there's also a subset of crimes that might make someone who's here lawfully subject to deportation proceedings. And that list is expanding and quite broad. And it would be quite shocking that misdemeanors, offenses that are low level, such as, you know, jumping the turnstile, things like that, can lead to someone being placed in immigration detention.
NECA, you want to tell us a little bit about your crossing story first? What brought you to this country?
My father was a lecturer at the University of UCLA, in Nigeria, but he was also a visiting professor. Uh-huh. So pretty much we came over here because he was on sabbatical and had some work to do here, and so I came along with him. And while we were here, he got ill and needed to take some tests for thank God it wasn't cancer, but, you know, for cancer. So that's one of the reasons why I came here.
And how'd you wind up facing deportation?
Oh, gosh. Well, when I came here, I got into a little, runnings with the law initially, you know, out of culture shock and stuff like that. And so I ended up having some problems. And in between then and now, I got caught in between the law and in between the changes of immigration law. And that's really why I was always in the pocket. So I wasn't able to get all my paperwork done. And even though I came with a visa, which is a legal visa, but I didn't renew my visa. And in between all that, I just got caught up immigration.
Talia, you want to talk more about NECA's case?
Sure, absolutely. So as NECA mentioned, about 20 years ago, she had a run-in with the law and had a drug offense, and then was sentenced, had done 6 months upstate of a program called the SHOCK program, and essentially absolutely turned her life around. Came out, became a huge community leader, gospel singer, became a mental health counselor, in every sense of the word, a true success in the criminal justice system, were she a U.S. citizen. And, 20 years later, she was driving in Long Island and had gotten pulled over for a driving-related matter, and then ended up in criminal custody in Nassau County, which turned, and she ended up being turned over to immigration. And that's how I got her case, through the New York Immigrant Family Unity Project, where I was the assigned counsel to represent her. So essentially, things from over 20 years ago, decades ago, are what really led her to face deportation at this time.
And how do these deportation proceedings work, Talia?
Yeah, so to give you a sense, actually half a block from here at 201 Varick Street is the immigration court in the middle of Tribeca, New York. And specifically on the detained docket, people are shackled and they're presented in orange jumpsuits. They're brought in shackled throughout the entire proceeding. And throughout the country, I think it's 80% of people represent themselves. That means they are sitting across from a trained Department of Homeland Security prosecutor and a judge, who both of whom clearly know and understand immigration law and are expected to defend themselves. And often, you know, English is not their first language. And immigration law is incredibly complex and really, really requires legal expertise to understand what someone's rights are.
80%. Without a lawyer. And who's on the other side? Is it someone from the U.S. Attorney's Office?
It's the Department of Homeland Security. They have a branch that is the trial attorneys, and that is who's prosecuting these matters.
So, Batya, you did this investigative report for City Limits on this whole world. What did you find statistically as to the difference that having a lawyer makes?
So people facing deportation in New York are 500% more likely to win their case if they have representation. I mean, it's a staggering figure, right? For a non-detained immigrant, if they have a lawyer, they have a 74% success rate. However, if they do not have a lawyer, they only have a 13% success rate. And for the detained immigrants, it's even worse. A detained immigrant who has a lawyer has an 18% success rate. A detained immigrant who has no lawyer, so we're talking about, I think it's actually 60% of detained immigrants who do not have a lawyer, they have a 3% success rate.
That's unbelievable. And so this interests you as journalists primarily to point out to the public, hey, look, there's this whole realm of American law and the only realm of American law where you're not entitled to an attorney?
An attorney or a bond hearing, there are certain crimes that trigger mandatory detention, meaning that these people, and these are all drug-related crimes, that they actually are not entitled to a bond hearing. The judge's hands are tied. They cannot actually release them from detention.
Yeah. So to add to that, it's not only drug crimes, but it's a wide array of different kinds of crimes that mean. And that's why the Laura decision, which came out, which this article really focuses on, is so essential. Mr. Laura was someone who was found subject to mandatory detention for an offense that had happened 3 years before he was picked up in the middle of the night by ICE at his home. And arrested and brought into proceedings.
ICE
and
is not ISIS, in case you misheard that. That is the law enforcement arm of the Immigration Service.
Correct. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. And he was put in immigration detention and due to the laws, because of his prior offense, was told he could not ask for bail, meaning he couldn't pursue his legal right to remain in the country, which he had, with being free, living with his family, living with his U.S. citizen son, who he was caring for. And we brought, at Brooklyn Defender Services, my colleague filed a habeas corpus petition to the federal court in the Southern District, arguing that he should have the right to at least have a judge consider whether he should be released on bond. And the federal court ruled in his favor, and the government appealed to the Second Circuit, and they affirmed, and on a different theory, but said that, yes, within 6 months of detention, someone must have the right to have a judge weigh whether or not they deserve to be there. That's how misinformation was able to be released.
Habeas corpus is basically appealing the grounds of your detention.
An unlawful imprisonment petition, yes.
Yes. So, NECA, everybody's on the edge of their seats now wondering, what happened? Well, you're still here.
I know. Like Talia was telling you, I got incarcerated, got put in detention. They call it detention in New Jersey. And I get in there, and it's not what I think it is. It's everybody is on edge about leaving the country or being deported. And we're told there's this list. that, you know, everybody's on this deportation list. And as I look around me, everybody is getting deported. My bunkie gets deported. The lady on my right gets deported. Everybody's going, you know, back to their country. And the system, the way they deport you, they don't tell you where you're going. You're not allowed to know. They come to your bed, wake you up in the middle of the night, 2 a.m., and tell you to pack up. And that's it.
Somebody decided in your absence, you're not there in court when a judge says, I'm sorry, I'm ruling against you, you're being deported. Doesn't work like that face to face?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't work like that. And also, there's a system where you might still even have a court date and you still be on deportation proceedings. And it's so much that was just going in there. Like, you know, little amenities like salt. We didn't have salt. We didn't have we didn't even get programs. Like, it was just GED program that they had. It was just a lot of things that was just going on. And I tried what I could best, you know, like getting some women that were involved with domestic violence. I put up a group there. I set up, you know, a little organization to, you know, for night prayers and stuff like that. So it helped out for some of the women, you know.
And Talia?
Yeah, to add to that, you know, this is called a civil system, right? We say that immigration detention is civil in nature.
As opposed to criminal.
As opposed to criminal. And I think what Ms. Ifemeja is speaking about being, you know, these individuals are in jail. No one should be in jail without the right to a lawyer. And the way our immigration system is today, that is not the case. Mm-hmm. And no one should face possible expulsion and banishment from the United States without a lawyer to look closely at their proceedings. This is in the interest, this is fundamental due process that is an American principle that I think we all hold dear. And I can tell you numerous people we've defended, we realize have claims to stay, might even be U.S. citizens and are in detention. So the need to have
Wait,
someone...
how could they be U.S. citizens and at risk of being deported?
That's a great question. What happens is some people may become U.S. citizens because their parents may have become citizens before they were 18 years old. And it's a complicated analysis that needs a lawyer to look at it. But there are people who think they're still green card holders, for example, but their parents became citizens. And, you know, I had a case of an individual who had been deported twice. And then I received his case and realized he was a U.S. citizen. And it's been documented that U.S. citizens have been deported. So all of this is to say that the need to have accurate legal information and attorneys representing these our fellow New Yorkers is critical.
All right. One of our callers, I think, wants some free legal advice from you, Talia. Let's see what you can do for Joanne in White Plains. Joanne, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
So we have, I live in White Plains, and we have a handyman who is legal. He has a green card. He's 70 years old and has been here for the past 50 years on green holder status. And I had encouraged him to go apply for citizenship so he could retire. He's been paying Social Security taxes for all of these years. And when he went and applied, they discovered that he had voted. And he had been signed up, I guess, with ACORN or one of these voting groups that said that because he was married to a U.S. citizen, that he could legally vote. And
you're going to get everybody in trouble now.
Exactly.
ACORN's in enough trouble.
Exactly. But he's not the most savvy guy. You know, he's from the Caribbean and, you know, and not the most savvy, but a wonderful man. And he's worked, you know, helped us with our rental properties for the past few years. And they were getting ready to deport him.
So wait, and he was going to get deported. A green card holder, you're saying, is or was going to get deported for voter fraud.
Right. And he's been here 50 years, paid taxes, U.S. taxes, and he was just trying to get his U.S. citizenship. He passed the citizenship test and everything. And the final step, they asked him if he had voted, and he told the truth because he didn't think he'd done anything wrong. And now we have a court date. This has been the last 3 years, and I've been paying for his legal fees.
This is not resolved yet?
No, and he's up for deportation next year. So in August of next year is his court case. So
wow.
There's a lot of people that he would have been deported a long time ago, without, you know, this legal representation that we hired. And
right, to the point of the segment about how important the lawyer is in a case like this.
Exactly.
Would it help? Well, Talia, do you have any question for Joanne?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I'm sorry to hear the circumstance. I think what you are pointing to is that how complicated immigration laws are. And actually, I think something that a lot of people don't know, in the 1990s, the laws were shifted in a way to make many more things make someone subject to deportation. Like you said, a green card holder, someone who is entitled to live, work here, pay taxes, has U.S. citizen family members, is a part of our society in every sense of the word, can still face deportation. And I think that's something that people don't know. And I appreciate you bringing that out. And that there's so many, you know, small things. Someone might very innocently, like you said, think that they are entitled to a certain benefit. There's so much misinformation in the immigration world.
Did he think that he was entitled to vote because he was a green card holder, even though he didn't have citizenship, which is the actual line?
He was told, because he was married to a U.S. citizen, that he was legal to vote. And if you go and Google online, you'll see back in, and this was back in the 90s and the 80s, that there, you'll see people who were convicted for signing up illegal immigrants for this exact same thing from these groups. So he was one of the victims of that and had no idea until 2 years ago, when he tried to get his citizenship and finally become a citizen. His mother lived here for many years, and she passed away. He has no family back home. He hasn't lived in Grenada in 50 years and knows no one. And here they are going to send this feeble man back. He has nobody to go to.
That's some story. And, Joanne, I hope it works out for him, and it sounds like you're a really good person to help this guy, who I guess your relationship with him is he's your handyman, to get legal representation and go through the process. So thank you very much for calling in and sharing that part of your story. So Batya Unger-Sargon from City Limits, there is a program in New York City now to provide lawyers for detainees.
Yes, there is. Our wonderful city council approved $5 million to go to the three great nonprofits of New York, the Bronx Defenders, the Brooklyn Defender Services, and Legal Aid Society, to provide representation for these individuals.
And do you think that something should be, if you want to take an editorial position, or is anything being considered on a broader basis to guarantee this as a constitutional right or anything like that?
It's very interesting, because when I asked immigration whether or not people in detention are getting due process because some of them don't have lawyers, they said, well, they can pay for a lawyer, which, you know, 60% of them can't afford it. Or there's the NYFA program, right, referencing this program explicitly. So they're sort of, in their minds at least, relying on this program as a way of ensuring due process.
NECA, for someone who's gone through this system as an individual, do you feel like the climate is turning against immigrants who may be on the verge of deportation for whatever reason? You know, even people in your situation, where there was so much reason for you to be allowed to stay in the country, or as it sounds like there probably is for the handyman who was referred to in the last call. Do you feel like, you know, and even before Donald Trump, let's say, but now maybe even more so, I heard that President Obama is expected to ramp up the number of deportations in 2016 of people who've been convicted of crimes. Do you feel like there's a climate out there that's changing over the years?
Yes, I actually do, because while I was in detention, there was a lot of people that didn't even have a crime. The only problem that they had was that they did not renew their visa. So you don't renew your visa, you get caught up with immigration, you sit in immigration detention for maybe 2 months before there's a chance of you seeing a lawyer. And if you don't see a lawyer, you're getting deported. So, and there were just so many people like that. On the other hand, NYFUP is amazing, because for me, if it wasn't for NYFUP, I will definitely be deported.
Really?
There was no question.
So it was this program passed by city council.
This is single-handedly. Huh. The only thing that's keeping me in here right now, because I was going to go. I was told by immigration already. I was on the list. I was just waiting for the day to get shipped.
So that is some testimony.
Yes. So I really, really commend them. And I want to bring awareness of immigration rights to immigrants. And like she said, start a blog. I just truly will be doing something like that. Honestly, because I had to educate myself literally. Because there's a lot of people that don't know, especially those that don't speak English. And then those that are older that think that they have certain American rights. No, you don't have those rights. There's some things that you just can't do. Look at the voter. You know, you go vote and you don't know that you're not supposed to. And there's a lot of misinformation, like she said.
And oh, by the way, if your visa is up for renewal, remember to get it renewed, right?
That's a biggie. It's a biggie. Yes,
Let me take one call of pushback on this whole thing. And it's Francis in Harlem. Francis, thank you for calling. You're on WNYC.
Hi, good morning, everyone. First, let me say I'm not voting for Donald Trump, but I have a different view. If I went to Nigeria and broke the law and overextended my stay, I would wind up in jail. If you come to this country and you violate the laws that are in this country that you want to be in, why do you think you don't have to pay? I'm not an immigrant, but if I break the law in America, I have to pay. You have to pay. If it means you're deported, then you're deported.
NECA?
Why do we have to pay for you to be here?
Now, what I'm thinking right now is, this is the issue. You break the law, and you're sent to jail. You actually do your time in criminal court. And then after that, immigration comes back, and then you're taken to immigration jail. So it's a double situation. You're actually serving your time twice.
So, how do you feel, Frances, about NECA's story as we heard it, which was that she had a drug offense 20 years ago, served, I guess, some kind of court-mandated rehab or something like that?
Served jail time.
Jail time.
Yes.
20 years ago, and since has...
I've reformed my life. I've transformed my life. I've changed my life. Things have changed.
And then they discover immigration
and my paperwork,
status on a traffic stop.
Not for nothing. My paperwork for immigration was in process with immigration.
Right.
They actually sent me a letter
citizenship.
Yeah, they sent me a letter saying I had
a year. So let Francis reply. Francis, go ahead.
My reply is twofold. One, if I did it in Nigeria, I don't think it would be as nice for me. And two, once you were convicted of anything, you should have been deported then, allowed to reapply from your country, and then come back. But not just stay here and spend millions of dollars to defend you because you broke the law.
Francis, thank you very much. And Talia, as NECA's attorney, I'm sure Francis speaks for many, many, many Americans.
Yes, thank you, Francis, for your comment. To respond, I want to say that immigration law, as it stands, doesn't say that people in NECA's situation should automatically get deported. They have a right for a hearing in immigration court, and that's what we're talking about. What should the hearing look like? They're allowed to see a judge. We're finding many people in immigration detention, including NECA, have a lawful right to remain in the United States. We are continuing to pursue NECA's case in the non-detained docket. She's eligible for asylum as well as a visa for having been a victim in this crime where she assisted in the prosecution. Many people who end up in immigration detention, no matter what brought them there, have a legal claim to remain in the United States. So they are facing a penalty. The penalty is facing deportation proceedings. We're not talking about, as an attorney, I'm not talking about who should at this moment face what proceedings, but how they face the proceedings. No one should face the proceedings without a lawyer. No one should be subject to mandatory detention without ever having the right for their circumstances to be considered. And when the judge was able to look at Ms. Efemaja's circumstances, the judge determined that she should not be held in detention anymore. And the last thing I want to respond to is that you made a comment about the millions of dollars being spent. This program actually is saving money to the taxpayer because the cost of children being put in foster care when their parents are in detention and other similar costs that the public incurs when someone's put in detention are enormous. Thank you, Brian.
And there we leave it. Batya, I'm going to ask you to stand up to let our newscaster, David, first get into your chair there. But Batya, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
For kind of organizing this. Batya Unger-Sargon, reporter for City Limits on this story about immigration detention and representation. NECA Efemaja, good luck to you.
Thank you.
subject of the story. And
thank
Talia,
you for having me.
Talia Peleg, immigration attorney at Brooklyn Defender Services, also described in Batya's story. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Brian.